I'm Susanna Mars, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I am sitting with three wonderful artists that were tagged last month here at the Hotel Deluxe, where we're having their beautiful afternoon tea. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves and tell you what their connection is with the arts community. So Samson, why don't you take it away? Samson, you were tagged by Beth Harper.
Yes.
Oh.
My name is Samson Seahirok. I am the office manager and registrar at Portland Actors Conservatory, and I am also one of the founding core members of Theatre Diaspora.
And Dina, why don't you go from there?
Yeah, I had a thumbs up when Samson mentioned Theatre Diaspora. I'm Dina Roberts. I'm a writer and former actor and playwright and also radio producer. And I run an organization called Media Rights, which is a nonprofit that I've run since 1991, doing all kinds of multicultural, multidisciplinary nonprofit work. And I am also the founding core member of Theatre Diaspora, which is a project of Media Rights.
And Veronica Nunez. Oh, and D-May, you
sorry,
were
Veronica.
Tagged.
That's okay.
Who were you tagged by?
I don't know.
Oh,
I wasn't
Lord,
here.
By Samson.
Oh, Samson. Right. Were you here last week, too?
No, but he got tagged, and because there were a couple of people who got tagged who couldn't come, and I asked Samson, I said, is there someone that you'd like to tag to come? Okay.
Cool.
Nice.
And I'm Veronica Nunez, and I'm currently working on a show at Northwest Children Theater, Sleeping Beauty. It's a pleasure. It's my second show with them. And besides that, I work at OMSI.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, I am a learning and community engagement specialist.
Oh,
so,
wonderful.
Yeah, I have two jobs that I'm really passionate about and that very often I combine.
It's so interesting because you were tagged by Jose Gonzalez
yes.
from Milagro, who had told a story about how you, this last year, stepped in as an understudy for a person who needed to leave, and that you basically saved the day for
what
Milagro.
What show?
It was El Muerto Vagabundo, the Day of the Death show.
I saw that. It was wonderful. You were in that.
Well,
everybody's
maybe
got makeup
well,
on.
Well, maybe
so
you didn't see it at the time that, I was in the show the last weekend, and my son was part of the ensemble from the beginning, so that's why I was really familiar with the show and the script and the story, and I was able and super happy to step in during the last weekend.
Oh, that, I didn't see it the last weekend.
Yeah.
That kind of courage. I mean, when Jose
yeah, that's
told
scary.
The story,
that's scary.
I broke out into a cold sweat just when he was telling the story.
I always dread having to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've understudied a lot.
Oh.
Yeah.
That
you
sounds
know,
hard.
I saw it the last weekend, and when
so
I
you
saw you in it, I didn't even realize that you, like, you just were so perfect at it. I didn't realize
oh, isn't that
thank
nice?
You.
That's what Jose said. Same
awesome.
Thing. And it reminded me of what a wonderful artist you are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. And, you know, like, I love the cast. I already had, you know, being part of the journey with them, my son being there. So, you know, my heart was in the show since the beginning.
Right.
I already had bought into the story. So, I mean, it was like just natural thing, you know, the natural thing to do. So I was just happy that I was there and available for them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of leads me to the question I had told you I was going to ask, which is, why do you think right now in particular it's important to be an artist, and what do you think we can do in the current political world? What do you think we can do to pave the way for better understanding, you know, in our city, in our nation? It's a humongous question. I've been thinking about it a lot. I'm working on a Stephen Sondheim concert right now, and of course every lyric has a new meaning. The introduction to There Won't Be Trumpets is goes, those smug little men with their smug little schemes, they forgot one thing. The play isn't over by a long shot yet. There are heroes in the world, princes and heroes in the world, and one of them will save us. Wait and see.
So have you changed it to There Won't Be Trumpets?
Okay, first of all, I did not think of that. And seriously, that's hilarious. I can't believe I missed that. What was I thinking? I'm so, you know.
Yeah, it takes
lyrics.
On a whole new meaning now, doesn't it? But I understand. It takes, like, this whole change that I know we're going to be undergoing, you know, in the next 4 years. Hopefully it won't last 4 years is my hope. But it puts a new lens on everything that you do.
Well, and it feels, I have been thinking a lot about the chasm between moneyed people and people who are really struggling. And I think that one of the things that art is so wonderful for me personally is opening up my heart to things bigger than what we have, and it's just sharing experiences. But then again, it's also expensive to go to see things. And how do we create experiences for people so that everyone's welcome and everyone's able?
And how do we break out of our bubble?
Yeah.
Because the arts community is a really great bubble, you know, it really is, but it is a bubble.
Right.
And how do we expand that?
Yeah, I mean, at Milagro, I was so taken with Jose last month because he was talking about the Christmas event that they do that's free to the public.
No.
And tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, La Posada. It's what they do every year. And I was part of that this year because I am I'm part of Latinx Improv. It's an improv in Spanish, and we were invited to be part of Posada this year.
How can people find out about that? That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so we have our Instagram page and our Facebook page as well, Latinx Improv, and we just, you know, we just came together this year. I think we are in Portland the only improv group in Spanish, which is really exciting. Yeah, we were invited to La Posada this year, and it was amazing. It was amazing. It's the Posada, it's an annual, you know, like holiday event that they do at Milagro where you have different, you know, things, music and different art pieces, hands-on and crafts.
It's totally free.
It's totally free, and people usually come with their families and spend the day, you know, doing different things at the theater.
Are there a lot of people who come to that event who are a part of Milagro already, or do you see a lot of attendees who are not normal theater goers or regular, I should say?
I think there is a mix of, you know, people that come that are regular theater goers and then just another part that are, you know, families that are looking for a place where they can celebrate in a way that resonates with their culture and their customs, and other people who want to explore how other cultures celebrate the holiday. So it's a mix, I would say, of people coming, but definitely a lot of families, I see.
I was so disappointed not to be able to come this year because I was doing a show at Artist Rep, and it sounded so wonderful, and I just sound like the kind of thing that I'm hoping that maybe this climate will encourage, and that those are more events that kind of bust open the doors.
Well, we do that quite a bit to a certain extent with theater diaspora because a good bulk of our audiences have never been to a theater performance, or maybe have been to one a year ago or something.
How are you calling those audiences?
Well, we work with community groups a lot, the same way Milagro does. I think Milagro is a really good model for us in many ways because they've been at it for so long. But we do most, you know, Asian American Pacific Islander theater, you know, with playwrights, and we reach out to AAPI groups to partner with us. We do community talk back, so a lot of the people in our partner organizations are part of the community talk backs.
When you do a community talk back, who moderates? I mean, and what are the topics that you
It depends. Each one of us can take a turn, or we get somebody to moderate, you know.
And kind of talk through with words about what the event was like for them. It's just,
well, we have a theme generally, and we'll talk about things that the play might bring up. For instance, our play in May called Washer Dryer deals with, in a very fun comedic way, millennial housing crisis. You know, and so we could do a talk back about what Portland is like regarding housing, which is really horrible right now, especially for young people.
Right.
For a play in October, The Brothers Paranormal. It's about two ghost hunters who are brothers who, you know, are hunting ghosts.
Can't find a house to hunt. No, can't find a house to haunt.
Well, actually, it's a great allegory for grief and loss. It's a ghost story, but it's also about loss and death. And so that we can deal, you know, have talkbacks about mental health because that's not talked about a lot in cultural communities, especially Asian American communities.
And that crosses the borders into all communities, I think, because when
it does.
I do Next to Normal at Artist Rep.
Nobody likes to talk about mental health, do they?
No. Nor you know, grief and loss.
No.
And it is.
There's taboo subjects still.
There are. Yeah. I hope that we're going to really, keep moving in the direction of transparency and vulnerability so that, I was fascinated actually. I joined a grief group after my dad died,
yeah.
And I was quite amazed by the breadth of people in the group.
Yeah.
It ran the gamut, and grief is the
it's great, universal.
It's the great uniter, you know?
Yeah.
We all lose things we love.
I think we need to find more universal topics like that for the work that we do, mm-hmm. and try to embrace communities that may not necessarily go to theater or go to an arts event. Mm-hmm. Performance event or even visual art event and see if we can connect with them better.
Right, and provide that kind of post-show event, whether it's a discussion. I'm kind of personally feeling less, you know, engaged by like a post-show discussion, quote-unquote, because I think there should be some discussion, of course, but also I think that maybe we're missing the boat on other ways for people to connect at events, you know, food and drink, and just spending time together in a, I don't know, what do you think, Samson, any other ways?
More like round tables with food and that kind of thing. Yeah, that's also
or
something.
Or music that's like-minded to the play.
Yeah,
or, you know.
What's great is some of our second-year students this year, they had an event last night called We Grab Back, and it was kind of a reaction to the election results, and it was a women's networking event that they got donations from women-run organizations, and they got a panel of about 8 women that were influential to them, and so there were lawyers and stand-up comedians and artistic directors, and they just got to talk about the issues that mattered to them and share their stories, and I think it was a great way for them to build the community that they want to have, and to have the support that they need.
And of course, art seems like such a no-brainer to me because it's always been a big part of my life, to go with friends and talk about it. But maybe it's, I don't think it's like that for everybody, right? Well, and it's expensive too. You know, going to plays.
Not our shows.
Yeah.
It's $10.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's,
And we also offer like half price for Oregon Trail cards and for students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. I sometimes wonder about, you know, any kind of cost being, you know, a problem for a lot of people,
right.
And then having to, you know, go someplace
right.
and park and all that. But I don't know. Most of the people, you know, like I'm doing this show called The Courtesan now, which is my first original play in 14 years, and it's at the end of January. And I figure most of the people will be people that I know who don't necessarily go to theater.
Right. Well,
you know?
We'll put all the information on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. And what's going on at PAC right now?
Right now they're in rehearsals for In the Blood by Susan Lloyd-Parks. It's directed by Victor Mack.
Oh,
it's
wonderful.
Amazing.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. And the students are just blowing it out of the water. And the theme of the play is just so... it's about Hester, who is a single woman with 5 children from different fathers, and how she's just trying to help her children to have the best lives that they can while being homeless. And
I watched Fences recently, mm-hmm. and I hadn't seen the play in a long time, and there's that wonderful section, I'll not be quoting this, but when Viola Davis's character says, you know, that her family had so many children from different fathers, and she never wanted that for herself. And oh my goodness, it's a heartbreaking moment. Mm. Not to say, of course, that that can also be, you know, a family. I mean, we make families a lot
of
ways now.
Yes, true.
But there was heartbreak associated with it in Fences.
Mm-hmm. And it could be actually more the norm.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of families.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? It's hard not to put forward like a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, I mean, I don't know how come certain people are happy and how they make a good life for themselves. That's all up to us. And speaking of making a happy life,
hello.
David
hello.
Is here to serve us tea, so we'll just disconnect for a minute and then we'll be
We're
back.
Having tea.
Yay! Well, perfect timing, because David came to get our tea order, and then Douglas Dietrich came, and I'm going to let him tell you about what he does in the world of Portland art.
Okay. I got here a little late, so I'm...
Shemish, as my grandma would say.
I'm still a little flustered. But yeah, I'm Douglas Dietrich. I'm a trumpet player and a composer, a jazz musician, and a lot of other kinds of music as well, and I'm the executive director of the Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble here in Portland. And
you were tagged by Daryl Grant,
yes,
to be at this podcast, and he adores you. I'm sure you know that already, but it's just really wonderful to see the kind of work that you're doing.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want me to talk about that? Or
sure.
Sure. Okay.
Well, we kind of we talked a little bit before about what we are thinking about now with the political climate as it is, how we want to step into this world, what we think we can do to maybe bridge the chasm in our city, in our country, you know, in our own home, for all I know. You know, what are you thinking on in those?
I wish I'd heard what you all had said. let's see. Well, I would have to say that I've always been pretty hesitant to make work that's even kind of political.
Mm-hmm.
But this year I feel a lot different about that. In that I don't know, a phrase that's been in my head a lot but hasn't come out of my mouth yet has just been like, no more Mr. Nice Liberal.
Mm.
Kind of thinking about that. That's my kind of personal. However, I mean, for people that know me, I'm like really nice, and I'm nice to a fault, and it's hard for me to not be that way.
What's kind of interesting is I've thought about that too, and that when you say no more Mr. Nice Liberal, the funny thing is, like, right, with being a person who believes in, you know, inclusion and diversity and sharing, it's how to not be nice with those values.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like just putting forth those values with more vehemence. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said. I mean, it's not so much nice or politeness. I think you can be political and still be polite to a certain extent. But I also think, you know, there comes a time when you just have to be very firm.
And I've always struggled as a woman asserting myself in the first place. And so that's really interesting, you know, to even the little simple things like, oh, I don't really care for this, I'm not going to eat it, and not feeling compelled to have to do something for someone else because we think it's nice.
Maybe no apologies is the theme, you know, no apologies.
Yeah, this is what I believe,
mm-hmm.
and that's how it is.
Yeah.
I don't think people should own islands. I don't think people should own islands.
Mm-hmm.
Said it. I know it's on a lot of people's minds.
Even though I'd like one.
I'd like one too, but maybe every state could get their own island. I'll
share with you, Susanna. I wouldn't mind.
I know, exactly. That'd be fun. That'd be a fun island. Yeah. Let's all go there.
Maybe I could talk to Misty, you know, about securing us an island for the podcast.
What is your budget?
Okay. Oh, $20
billion? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We can do that.
Right.
So what's the next event coming up at Portland Jazz?
Well, the Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, our next event is our student mentorship concert.
Mm-hmm.
So we have three student composers that we've given mentors to. The students are not paying for the mentors, we're paying for the mentors. So they're getting private composition lessons, and then we're also hosting four public workshops that's open to the whole community that we're hoping, you know, you can learn how do you write trumpet parts, you know, how do you write parts for brass instruments, for saxophones, and for the piano, bass, and drums, because it's just it's very technical, and there's a lot of things you have to know,
mm-hmm.
and so we want to try to spread that knowledge more and try to skill up our little community a little bit more.
It's so cool because, I mean, I would venture even a person who wasn't going to enter the world of music, that type of collaboration, I mean, this is my... I mean, for heaven's sake, education benefits so much from the arts education. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
But so why aren't we doing that? I don't know. What do you think, Samson? Why aren't we doing that?
I don't know. I feel like it is important, and the in the school system, it's just kind of pushed aside.
I know.
And I honestly don't know. I wish I could go to the people to talk to and be like, hey, more arts.
How did you get interested in the arts? Because you're a pretty young person.
Well, honestly, I was in college, and I didn't really know what I was doing with my life. And I tried out for a play, and I got the role, and my college actually didn't have a theater department, we just had a drama club. And so we created this original piece called Origenda, and we went to the Kennedy Center Festival.
Wow. And that's impressive.
And then we won national awards.
Oh, for
whoa.
Show. And the most amazing thing was after one of our shows, I was walking out into the lobby and this woman came up to me and said, that show changed my life. Mm. I will not look at things the same. And I was a college kid and I was like, that's amazing. That's what I want to do for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. is to have people look at things a different way. And I think that everyone benefits from that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's super interesting that you bring that up, because my son was recently, he just turned 12, mm-hmm. and he was in his first show at Milagro, and to me it was amazing to see him right during the rehearsal process and during the run of the show. You could see the learning experience that was being for him. Where, you know, I mean, he goes to school and, you know, for him, that was such a different, you know, way to approach reading, for example, or connecting or listening, that I wish it was something that was part of his life all the time.
Right.
And not something, I mean, and a lot of people, you know, were like, oh, you know, just other people asking me, like, you know, like, you know, how do you do it? Like, he goes to school and then, you know, is that going to affect, you know, him going to school because he's spending so much time? And I'm like, well, school is important, right? But to me, just life, you know, and other experiences that he can have. Like, to me, school is important for what you're getting from the experience, not just because, but if you are becoming a better listener, a better person, someone who's, you know, connecting with the content that is being offered. So to me, it was like, it's affecting his school. Like, to me, it's more like the person, it's affecting him. How is this, you know, affecting him in a way that is making him grow?
Right.
So in a way, I was wishing that all the kids could have, not that they would do theater, but that they will have the option, you know, because not everybody have the option want to do it.
Right.
But like the option of doing it, the same, you know, adults and everybody, I don't think people realize it's an option. Mm-hmm. I think that's a problem, or that's a challenge with accessibility, mm-hmm. that people sometimes, I think it's the money, it's other things, but it's the idea that I don't belong there. Like,
right.
You know, historically for many groups and many people, it's like, do I belong here? Like, what do I do here? I know I work in the museum world, which is a different kind. So I see that, you know, with underserved communities as well. It's not, I mean, the cost influence, you know, that sum. But there's another level of like, how do I fit here?
How does OMSI reach out to people who have those feelings of how do I fit here?
Yeah, for many years they've been, you know, working around this, and it's not easy, I would say, even with the best of the intentions. I think we have moved forward tremendously,
right.
like in doing, but I see that it's a struggle for many organizations, because changing the people who are accessing, you have to change internally. You can't serve, you know, communities if you don't have them from the top to the bottom. In other words, like, how are you going to include the Latino community if you don't have Latino employees
right.
discussing that?
Right.
How would you include the Asian community if you don't have Asian people in that? So it's kind of like shaking, and people, as much as people are interested in doing that, there is a lot of fear. Because, like, after that that movement happens, where do I fall?
Right.
You know? So people are as interested as they are protected, which I think is very human.
Yes, but I think what you say about the staffing is really important, mm-hmm. because I know, you know, when I'm at Artist Rep, I'm a resident artist, and I go to a staff meeting, that every single person in that group, they're working hard to get people to the theater. So you're going to get the people that you know there. So it's literally a direct line, feels like.
Exactly. So you have to be inclusive. Start within the institution. It's really hard to start from there, because you have to start being inclusive, you
right,
know,
right.
within that circle, so you get the ideas and the conversations going, mm-hmm. to actually start reaching out. But
right.
without that, it's really hard.
I know, and it's awkward. I mean, a lot of these conversations are very uncomfortable.
Really
awkward. And really, and it's like having integrity in relationships.
Yeah.
You reach out to a community, then you've got to really stand up for, I want to stand up and be in a relationship with you.
Exactly.
It's actually like dating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but having integrity in your relationships, mm-hmm. all relationships, including the work relationships as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, you invite someone. It's really interesting. It's funny, right?
Yeah. I think part of it is like we, the same as with the theater and when creating things, it's like how to be okay being uncomfortable,
right.
knowing that the process is going to be uncomfortable.
Oh, it's awful. I hate
and it's
it.
Awful, but it's kind of like being okay, or like at least being aware and realizing it's part of the process, because it's like we want to make this process like beautiful and painless, and in reality at some point it's going to be painful, or it's going to be affecting, you know, some people.
Right.
So the more we are aware of that, the more we surrender to the pain, to the change, and to the process.
That's just like grief and loss. The reality is you can walk next to it.
Yeah.
It's going to be uncomfortable. And that's like, I don't know why in our culture we've decided everything's got to be so beautiful.
Exactly.
And like, oh, we are happy in Disneyland. That's what did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I've had difficult conversations for most of my adult life,
mm-hmm.
being biracial, you know,
right.
and having to,
a beautiful book about
you know,
it.
Having mm-hmm. to have these difficult conversations all the time. In fact, people seek me out to have these difficult conversations.
You're a difficult conversation leader.
Thank you, I guess. But I think that the more you do it, the more you get used to it. And sometimes you
yeah.
can just kind of circumvent things. Like if you hear somebody start saying something that's a bit tingy, you know, like
mm-hmm.
racist tingy,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of circumvent it and go, oh, well, what you mean is this, you know, because
right.
I even had to deal with that with, you know, with friends
mm-hmm.
and, you know, even
well,
in-laws, you know.
Because language is complicated.
It is.
Yeah, and people don't, basically, I think people are, in general, want to be, I don't know, want to have these conversations,
be
but
kind,
they want to be good about it,
mm-hmm.
you know. They don't want to hurt anybody. I think there is a segment of the population now that's rising that does want to hurt people, but you know, maybe out of their own ignorance and not having any kind of association and being slightly
mm-hmm.
brainwashed, in my opinion,
right?
Because they don't have exposure and contact with people that are quote-unquote, different from them,
right.
you know, but I think that the more you have these conversations, the easier it gets, you know, and I think
mm-hmm.
it gets easier for the person that you're talking with, too,
mm-hmm.
but we have to have them, and we're going to have more of these.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
In the jazz community, do you see a diverse group of students, or how's that in the world of jazz? I mean, historically, there's a pretty diverse group of artists, of course, but in Portland, I wonder, does that reflect, or?
No.
No. I kind of thought it might
answer.
Not.
Right, yeah.
Is there cream?
I mean, well, you know, it's kind of...
I'm sorry, I just wonder if there was cream.
No, cream?
Yeah.
This is butter. I'm sorry.
That is, oh golly, clotted cream.
You don't put that in here.
That's for the scones.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
getting scones? Wow.
Getting scones.
But
oh,
you really
see,
treat us right.
Wait till you see the sandwich tower. You're going to
fancy.
Is that cream over there?
All right,
oh.
When he comes back, we'll get
okay.
cream. It must be, I know it's here somewhere.
You know, I
I'll
had
it this way.
A two-hour conversation with Daryl about that just yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We were
right?
talking
cute.
About the Portland jazz scene.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It is a
and that's Daryl Grant, who's head of the jazz program at PSU.
Correct, yeah. It is a pretty overwhelmingly white male community.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that the kind of the... If you program a very pretty straight-ahead traditional jazz, you know, concert, mm-hmm. The audience that shows up, if they do at all, tends to be, you know, old and white. And you know, so we've found the last concert that we did as the PJCE, we had 5 singer-songwriters join us who are not jazz musicians at all, mm-hmm. And all women, and kind of representing a really diverse collection, you know, both of communities, of people, and also of musical styles. And it was one of our most diverse audiences that came to hear the concert. You know, so I think
maybe speaking to the idea we were saying earlier, which is you need to showcase artists, diverse artists, and have diverse mm-hmm. staff who people are thinking about how to do these things in order to really walk the walk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I think so. But it's, you know, so. But of course, I mean, what I talked about with Daryl yesterday was that issue of actually cultivating a more diverse like workforce and a more diverse board, and those. We talked about how difficult that is because that means heads will roll, you know. That means either you don't bring somebody back that you've had for a long time or you know. So those are really important and possibly painful decisions that have to be made.
Do you know what just came to my mind in that? And of course this would probably be impactful financially, but there are so many wonderful organizations, Milagro, Media Rights, who have these diverse communities, and what if we trade administrators for 6 months or... You know, I mean, what if we actually invaded each other's organizations, you know, and traded?
Mm-hmm.
Because
I think it'd be really hard to do that, Susanna, because you have different duties and different ways of doing things. I think that's...
But isn't that the point, kind of?
Yeah, like, I don't
think
so.
Like, we have different ways of doing things, and I would sure like to learn from you guys how you're cultivating your audience and your programming and so on. I mean, and same with you, Doug. I'm sure Daryl, too, at PSU. But I see your point. I mean, like,
it'd be difficult. I think it's more just what we're talking about is just changing the whole demographic of your board as well as your administrative
and
staff.
Will roll. I mean,
well, yeah, but people, there's also attrition. There's also people moving. People are moving on. Not me, but a lot of people seem to be moving on from one job to another now, you know, especially with younger generations, it seems like. I don't know, you know.
A program that, you know, OMC implemented in the past that I thought was successful in terms of involving different communities, it was called, I believe, the Ambassadors Program, where they identified people, you know, from different communities, underserved communities, people that were leaders in their communities, and they engage, you know, with them. So they were the voice of the museum in their community. So instead of trying to reach an entire community by me going and saying, hey, you should come, it's more like engaging with someone who, you know, the community trust and the community listen to.
That's a great idea.
And then, but you engage, you know, with this person and you try to learn instead of you being, you know, trying in a way to get into the community. It's more like, hey, I want to get to know the community. I want to have someone from your community speak to these in the terms and in the words and in the, you know, world that you know, that you live. So in a way, it's I feel it's less invasive. You know, you have to have a lot of integrity in the sense that what you're offering, to follow through and to generally be interested in doing it, not just because you are required to bring more diversity to your organization, but you have to genuinely. That's one of the things that I feel the communities read the most. It's like how genuine you are about wanting to bring these resources, or why do you want me to come over to your theater or to your organization? It has to be genuine. Like, we want you to be part. You have to, in a way, give people a voice if they are there. So once people come, you have to open up to what people think and their suggestions and things like that. Right. So you can continue that and nourish that relationship. So I think organizations have to be at the point where that openness is there.
Right.
because I think what's hard is that you bring people and you feel like everybody's going to be like, oh, this is great, I love all this, what's happening or all the place, and sometimes new communities come and say, you know, I don't resonate with this.
Right.
And then you have to be prepared to listen to that and accommodate and or at least be able and open to have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you are saying, come under my terms and to see what I am offering.
Right.
And then I think that's where, you know, things...
Right.
Because that's, you know, that's almost... it's forcing the organization to change. So sometimes we want, you know, to
it's
make...
like arts colonialism.
And so we have to, you know, because I think a lot of organizations are like, yes, we want the change and we want people. But what does that mean for the institution is like, it's a lot of hard work that it's amazing. It's a great payoff. The payoff is actually having a more rich community and a more rich environment. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that rich environment, the same as in families, right? Mm-hmm. The more rich means also sometimes dealing with deeper issues.
Right.
Intimacy and closeness in all environments require that work, right?
Again, it's going to get uncomfortable.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Well, so. That's hopeful.
Well, it's almost like you're embedding in another community, aren't you, in order to build trust, right? And it isn't just come see my show or come see my event, you know, or
it's
come to my art show. Be a part of it and go out there and do the work out there, and then maybe they'll come, right? Mm-hmm. I also think, you know, we've been talking a lot about racial equity, but there's a class thing going on, especially what this new administration has shown us. Is that there's the huge, huge divide between people who have and people who don't have. Mm-hmm. And often that falls within race lines. Sometimes it doesn't as much. And there's also, I think, a need that we need to reach out towards communities that don't value art at all because they aren't exposed to it. They don't get it in the schools, mm-hmm. obviously, for most part, or they just don't see that there's a connection there, a deep personal connection with art and, mm-hmm. you know, their lives, because they don't see that reflected.
Right.
So there has to be some kind of movement towards those mm-hmm. kind of conversations where we go to communities that may not want us there. They
right.
may not want your race. They may not want your art. They may not want
yeah.
what you have to offer, but we need to go there to have these conversations.
Yeah. Do you want to describe the sandwich
oh my
frenzy
God.
So that everybody can start
I'm
eating?
Gonna have
I know,
dinner
oh, my
later.
God. What is this?
Four, so.
I didn't know. Why did you have this at earlier?
I know.
All right, yeah. Let's
is
go over everything.
Thanks, David.
So on the bottom, we have all of our finger sandwiches.
Oh, my word.
With the dark bread, that's our honey ham and English mustard on rye bread. We have a curry chicken salad on wheat bread. We have a tomato twiddle, which is tomato and cheddar cheese on white bread. And we have a cucumber and dill mayonnaise on white
cucumber
bread.
Cucumber sandwich. I have to have a cucumber
I know.
Sandwich.
They are so delicious, too.
I mean, that's so classic, isn't it?
Besides here, these triangle ones, those are James Beard's. They're sweet Vidalia onions and seasoned mayonnaise. They're rolled in parsley on white bread.
Oh, man, that sounds good, too.
The next level, we have all of our scones. We have traditional
oh my God.
Black currants. They're an English-style scone, which means they're less sweet and buttery than the American-style scone, but we have a bunch of toppings on the table for them. We have our clotted cream, which is imported from England.
I know.
And our blackberry sage jam is made here by our chef.
Fantastic.
Oh, is that what this is?
The top level, we have all of our desserts.
No,
we have our sticky toffee date pudding.
Oh, you're killing me, man. You're killing me. You're getting all this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Our pistachio macarons with a
oh,
cream.
Man.
There we have our squidgies, which are chocolate grenache salted on top of a hazelnut cookie.
I'm just gaining weight just listening to this.
Sitting here.
And in the center, we have Victorian cakes, which is a citrus sponge cake layered with strawberry jam and topped with orange marmalade and vanilla bean cream.
Are you kidding me? Look at, oh my gosh. All right.
I think everyone's going to have a to-go box. I know that much.
Oh, really?
It looks delicious.
Well, is there a better place I can put these for you?
I think this is good. We'll pass it around.
Okay, great.
Two of them?
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Oh,
wow.
Well, I guess I better.
Well, people are starting to eat sandwiches, and I thought before we kind of dig in, maybe we'll just sum it all up with a thanks for coming today.
Well, thank you,
Susanna. Thank you, Susanna.
And if there are some people that you'd like to tag for next time, drop me an email or call me, and because I think that would be fun to kind of sprout this community from the people.
Yes.
Do every week.
Oh, I would love
that. I just started it last month, and it was such a nice group. I think it would be great.
You're doing once a month then?
Yeah, well, we do the tea once a month, and then I do it, the podcast weekly. I've actually interviewed Douglas probably. You were one of the first people I ever interviewed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and just kind of going along, and I think it's fun to tag people, especially because I end up meeting with a lot of people who I don't know, you know, and that's nice. So thanks again for coming, and enjoy your tea.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.